we're at verse 1 in 1 Kings 19. I think we all know that this comes on the heels of Elijah's mighty victory over the prophets of Baal and Asherah at Mount Carmel in chapter 18. Assuming we all are pretty familiar with that context and this ongoing battle between Yahwism and Baalism, we pick it up at verse 1. Vayagad Akav le'Izavel. All right. So the first word is from Nagad, and it's a Hifil-based verb, so it doesn't have any causative meaning. Very common. It's first nun, so the nun is assimilated into the gimel. So Hifil imperfect, third masculine, singular from Nagad. Vav consecutive, so we're in the middle of a narrative. If Hebrew wants to start a new section, it wouldn't begin necessarily with a vav consecutive imperfect. So we're in the middle of things, and Ahab and Nagad's declares to Jezebel. Jezebel would be from the island city of Tyre, and her father's name is Ethbaal, which tells us a little bit about his allegiances theologically with Baal. So she is really the one who is credited with completely corrupting her husband, Ahab, with worldview of Baal and Mot and Yam and Asherah and Ael and Nahar and all of these different deities in the Canaanite pantheon. So Ahab declares to this one Jezebel, this one steeped in a Baal worldview, at Kol Asher Asa Eliyah. So what did she? What did he declare to her? Well, then the accusative marker tells us kind of the direct object of what is declared. Everything which Elijah did. And the eight Kol Asher Harag. So he went on. And specifically, everything or all whom he, that would be Eliyah, haragged, you know, slew. That would be all the prophets by means of a Kerev. Here it's, of course, apostle form, Kerav. So Ahab declares to Jezebel everything which Elijah did, especially how he killed all the prophets by means of a sword. So, the action is pretty intense here. So Jezebel is going to send a Moloch, all right, to Eliyah. Now, there's some kind of play going on here with this word Moloch. So she sends a messenger, and then Yahweh is going to send a messenger. We see that in the middle of verse 5, Vehene ze Moloch. And we say, well, you know, another messenger, and we're really not clear as to who this messenger is until verse 7. Moloch Yahweh. So at least literarily, there's a word play going on between Moloch. Jezebel has her Moloch, and Yahweh has his Moloch. One is intent on death, the other intent on life. Okay, so we'll come back to Moloch and Moloch Yahweh, but just to note that here in verse 2. So this messenger is sent to Eliyah saying, so this is apparently what Jezebel is saying through her messenger. And here we have this somewhat formulaic idea used with people who are making an oath. So, ko thus, ya'asun. There's that paragogic nun, which most grammarians think adds emphasis to the verbal action. Thus may Elohim, now coming from the lips of Jezebel, this Elohim is not a plural of majesty. relating to Yahweh, but just God's plural. So, thus may gods do, because we have Ya'asun, that's a plural verb already. So we know that she's a polytheist and has many gods and many lords. So thus may gods do, and thus, literally, another paragogic nun for emphasis, Yosifun, that'd be a hifil from Yasaf, Joseph, it means to add, and maybe here, and thus continue, you know, add, indeed, okay, ki, ke'et. So what's she saying here? Something like, this is how we'd express it, thus may the gods do to me, we have to fill that in, and thus they will add, according to the time, makar, tomorrow. So if by tomorrow, we kind of fill this in, asim, I will place your nefesh like the nefesh of one from them. So she's calling down curses upon herself by means of this statement. Toward her gods. May the gods do to me, and even then some, if by the time tomorrow I don't kill Elijah. So she means business. She means business. It's kind of like these guys in Acts 25. Is that where they make this vow? They won't eat or drink until they kill St. Paul. Somewhere in that section. Yeah, yeah. So God's people sometimes have people so, you know, entrenched in their demise that they make vows. And that's what's going on here. So what does Elijah do? Verse 3. He sees, now there's a flag on the play. You know, this could easily be repointed. And I'm just kind of scrolling down to 3a. It says, perhaps read with a few manuscripts, and we have the Septuagint, Syriac, and Vulgate, all reading this as Yirah, rather than from Ra'ah. Ra'ah, you know, to see, that's how it's pointed in the Masoretic text. But apparently the versions and the editors want us to understand it from Yirah. So he didn't see, he was all shook off with Elvis, okay? He was afraid. And so what? So he arose. So you just have these three imperfect vav consecutive actions. So boom, boom, boom. He doesn't mess around. He is afraid. He arose and he walked. And so apparently you kind of have to pick up, you know, El Naf Sho with the first verb. He was afraid, you know, L to his life, literally, and we'd probably say he was afraid for his life. So he arose and walked. But it's a little strange not to have the El Naf Sho following the verb Yirah. See that? Okay, everybody there, my great class here today. Yeah, but see, normally it would be Barak. Is that the Hebrew word for flee? Oh, I can tell you, I know right where it is. It's in, you know, one would be in Isaiah 48, verse 20, where we have that word. Is it Bakar? Yeah, Barak. It is Barak. If you turn to page 751, so this is Isaiah's preaching. Se'u mi Bavel, so go forth from Babylon. Birku mikastim. So there's the fleeing. But I'm sure that in other places there's, you know, people baracking. You know, I have no political aspirations or intentions in saying barak here. But yeah, that's a norm, more of a frequent word where they're fleeing for their life. Yeah. What, fugo? Is that what the Septuagint has? Or?
Normal for fleeing for your life.
Yeah. Oh, in the. Yeah, there's probably a pretty nice textual tradition underneath all of this. If we repoint the fearing word, yirah, and then we just follow the syntax of the Masoretic text, probably the Deuteronomistic historian, as he's normally called, wants us to see this quick action in these three verbs, and that's why he leaves the El Nafsho, would be my guess. Well, anyway, moving on. So he went to Beersheba, Be'er as well, and there are seven wells, which was in Judah. And there, this is a Niphal from Nuk, and I'm sorry, it's a Hifil from Nuk. And it means he left his attendant Sham there. So a Nahar doesn't always mean someone who's young. That's Jeremiah 1 verse 5. He says, I'm a Nahar, I can't speak. Josh was called a Nahar. So it's someone in a subservient, social role. It doesn't necessarily denote someone's age. So he left his servant, his attendant there. And he, this independent personal pronoun, he halaked Bamidbar. He went into the desert a day. So he went a day's walk into the desert. And he went and he yashavd, he dwelt under a rotem, a broom tree, which is probably just like a bush. And there was one of them. And he asked his life, lamut, to die. Just infinitive construct from moot. So there are only two other people in the Hebrew Bible who ask their nefesh to die. Moses in Numbers 11 and Jonah in Jonah chapter 4. So this is a direct link back to Moses, because he's going to Horeb and everything. So he's Moses-like, is how we're to understand this particular death wish. And he said, probably, great now, Yahweh. So it's just too great for me. Ravata, Yahweh, take nafshi, not take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to thee. Just take my life. For it is better, comparative men on the may avotai from my fathers, literally. But it's better, I am no better than my fathers, is how we'd understand that. The tov becomes a superlative by means of that comparative men may. Okay, so then we rush along here, verse 5. So he lay down and he slept under the broom tree, and there's one of them. And here comes a Moloch, a different Moloch, a life-giving Moloch. And so apparently, according to Hebrew narrative style, when you have a Hene, this is like the first Hene we've got. So this is a big deal, right? So the author wants us to really notice. So if you're preaching or teaching on this text, this is the narratival emphasis. There's a Moloch, all right? And we noted already that this is not only a Moloch, verse 7, this is a Moloch Yahweh. Now, the Moloch Yahweh first appears in Genesis 16, and he's attending to Hagar. All right, and Hagar is completely dismissed by Sarah. She's placed in Sarah's hands. Sarah kicks her out. She's in a desert. She's got a wild ass for a son. Life is not treating Hagar very well. And Hagar is not even an Israelite. So this Moloch Yahweh is this person then who is compassionate and helping people who are completely dismissed. And in this case, this fits in very nicely with the first appearance of the Moloch Yahweh in the Old Testament. Because Elijah's in the same position, essentially, only he's an Israelite. And he's touching him, and he said to him, arise, eat. And he stared. This is a Hifil-based verb from Nabat. He stared. He didn't look. He stared. And behold, another hine, from his head, a cake of bread, coals. All right? All right. So warm bread. All right? And a jug of Mayim water. And he ate and he drank and he returned and he slept. Verse 7, the Malach Yahweh returned, Shenit, a second time, and touched him and said, arise, eat, for great from you, ha darik. So the way, you know, from you is great. You have a long ways to journey. So he arose and he ate and he drank and he went in Koach, in the power of the of that food, ha'akalia ha'hu, 40 days, I mean it's 40's day in idiomatic Hebrew, and 40 nights until har ha'elohim, which is exactly how the whole Moses narrative begins in Exodus 3 verse 1. Moses goes to the har ha'elohim. And that is there in Exodus 3, verse 1, called Horeb. All right, well, maybe just a few preaching points. It's really the battle of the messengers, and Yahweh's messenger is a providing messenger who gives food and drink. And I think in verse 8, see, Be'koach, in strength and in power. This is what the presence of the Malach Yahweh does time and again. And we understand this is a technical term for the logos asarkos, the word apart from flesh. And so it's really begging for an understanding finally of Christ, who is the one who attends to burned out church workers and gives them power to continue on the journey, because the journey is rav, great.